Voice Radio.
Hello and welcome to Kind Voice Radio. I'm David Levin.
And I'm Jessica Greenspan.
And this is our first show of the new season. And we're real excited to have Ariana Ross on of Story Tapestries.
Ariana Ross is the founder of Story Tapestries, an innovative organization that at its core promotes the power of storytelling to introduce positive change in the community. Story Tapestries has a passion for integrating the arts into the learning process, which empowers educators across the globe to creatively weave music, dance, and other art forms into science, technology, engineering, and mathematics fields. Ariana uses her talent and skills to create a domino effect that impacts teachers and schools by helping them overcome economic, cultural, and emotional barriers. How does she achieve this? For that, let's hear from Ariana herself. Ariana, welcome to the program.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
We're so thrilled to have you on because, I mean, it's a perfect fit for a Kind Voice, the way you weave stories together. And to start off, can you give us a little bit of an overview of what Story Tapestries does?
Absolutely. And, we couldn't be a better fit for this concept because one of the things that we've talked about over the years is that as an organization, we really believe in empowering, engaging, and educating people to find their own voice. And it could be their teacher voice, their innovator voice, their compassionate voice, their kind voice, their writer voice, their artist voice. And that we use the arts woven with science, math, technology, language arts, social emotional issues to help them find their voice. Sometimes our programming is out in the school system. Sometimes our programming, we are working in after-school programs in community centers and libraries. We work with both adults and young people. As early as 2-year-olds, and I tell people as old as 104.
And that's really interesting what you said about the different kinds of voices, because, you know, when you try to be a kind voice, it can mean different things in different places to different people. Like sometimes it has to be a kind voice with some humor mixed in. Other times it just has to be very pure and very, very authentic. So mixing the different kinds of voices together is kind of a real art form. Do you ever kind of do things on the fly where you have a plan to do it one way and then you kind of change up as you're seeing your audience react?
Absolutely. So I always tell people there's almost four different types of programs that we do, meaning that some are performances, live shows, where myself or another one of our artists or another one of our team goes and performs. And I tell people when it's a, sometimes we do send storytellers, but sometimes I tell people storytelling can be musicians. It can be a dancer. It can be a media literacy artist where they're creating a film. But as a traditional storyteller, I tell people all the time that I create a framework. And then depending on my audience, I will adjust the meat, the details inside to fit and suit their needs. And one of the things we're very careful about is all of the artists we hire, we make certain that they have that ability. They have that ability to be flexible, to custom design their performances to fit the needs of their audience. When we do a workshop, it's the same thing. Today is a prime example. We were in a school, Phyllis E. Williams Elementary School in PG County. And it happens that Phyllis E. Williams is a Spanish immersion school. So, and it was a professional development residency. So we were training the teachers on how to use those strategies in the classroom to help their students find their voice. But the classroom is being taught fully in Spanish. And I speak English, and I speak a little bit of Spanish, and I speak Portuguese. So today we were using a mixture of Spanish and English with the students to be able to help them develop their understanding of the concept of a hero. And we talked about how Jose in the story was a hero, not because he, like, was a firefighter or a policeman or, you know, a superhero, we talked about he was a superhero because he helped his mom take out the trash. His sister wanted to be a superhero like him, so he got her his baby blanket and he tied it around his neck. And the children defined what a superhero was someone who was kind, generous, helpful, thoughtful, and that literally the last on the list was brave and strong.
I love that, because you take a superhero and you really bring it down to earth, to the everyday things we all can do in life, as opposed to flying through the air or cartoonish stuff. So it's very cool you do that. Can you kind of walk us through the beginning of the process when you first engage with a teacher, how you customize the program?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we prided ourselves on this last year is our new website launched in July. And one of the things that we developed, I say this because of what you just asked me, is we really looked at our process, and we realized that we created an infographic, which is called our collaborative model. At the heart of the collaborative model is always the audience, which is children and adults, the families, the people, the individuals, and the community itself. And we tell people it's kind of like the scientific process, right? First thing you do is you observe the situation. So we go, we meet with the community. We go and we observe. We find out what the needs are. We ask questions. We find out what are they looking at? What do they want? What are their needs? What are they thinking about? Sometimes we'll do a survey, a pre-survey, so we can really understand. After we do the observation process, after we ask the questions, then we start to design the program. So we design the program, and then we share the lesson plans. We share the ideas with the teachers, with the administrators, with the principals, with the parents. And we really look at it together. We try it out. We say, all right, this is what we all think is going to work. Let's do it. We try it. We work on it. And then while we're in the process of it, just like the scientific process, we evaluate it again. So, all right, did that work? That exercise did not work. Let's make an adjustment. Now, because we've been doing this, I've been telling stories and working with children. I realized the other day that I needed to up my bio because I've been doing it now for 20 years. This is my 21st year doing this work. Story Tapestries has only been around for 8 years, but I've been doing this work for 21 years, or this is my 21st year. And so what I tell people is best gifts that you can ever give me as my client, as my community partner, as my collaborator, is to offer us feedback. Even though I've been doing this a long time, and most of my artists, Diane Macklin is an artist who, if you ever need a kind voice, single solo story, oh my goodness, she is magnificent. And a gift to the community because of how she, and we partner with her and her work. We partner with a man named Reggie Kabiko. He's a slam poet. Bonamani Arma, Jamal, Mr. Roots. And all of them have been doing this for a long time, but they will all tell you that they take the feedback that the audience offers, that the students offer them, and they take it seriously. And they make adjustments. They make changes to make sure that it is really, truly fitting the needs, which is why we realized that for us, that collaborative model was a circle.
Yeah, as you were speaking, that's what I was thinking, the iterations, how you apply the scientific process to create the right form of art to help enable students to better learn the scientific process and connect art with
exactly.
science. Can you give us an example of like an art performance that would help a child with either science or math?
Excellent. So I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to do a performance slash a workshop because I think sometimes the workshop is even more effective. We've done many performances, but we had the gift of working with the Gaithersburg Community Museum, and they had commissioned us. There's a telescope that actually is one of the first telescopes in the area. It was a wooden one. It was a man's backyard originally, and now it's a small park. And they actually commissioned us to create a show that was connected to the history of that. And then we wove with that stories about the stars. And one of the things, just to give the best example I tell students, is that, you know, many, many years ago, these stories, these folk tales were created because people didn't have telescopes. They didn't have the answers. So they were trying to figure out where Ursa Minor came from. They looked at the sky and they create a story about two brother bears who had an argument, who had a fight. And they argued and they fought. And one bear stormed off. And as he stormed off, he didn't even notice how far he'd gone. And the snow grew higher and higher and higher. And soon he realized that he had to climb up on the top of the snow, climb on the clouds. And soon the gray bear was flying up into the sky. And to this day, you see him flying across the sky towards his brother, and that is Ursa Minor. And that's how people made up the science of where stars came from. And so we use performances about scientific topics to get kids to question, to think, to wonder, to come up with ideas. And then the most powerful piece is the workshops afterwards. So a prime example of a great workshop, I'm going to give you two, so you see sort of two different age levels, was we were working with a math teacher in Arlington, it happened to be, and this particular math teacher said, look, my students have intellectual and developmental disabilities, and their memory is not very long. They tend to forget. So what happens is I teach them something, they get it in the classroom, they understand, they go take the test, and they forget. So I need to figure out what can I do to help them, because in life, these are skills they need to know. So they were learning how to graph the coordinates. And so what we did is we used choreography, dance. And we took the classroom in this middle school, and we put blue tape on the ground, and we made a gigantic graph on the floor of the classroom. And the kids... Negative was movements that were low and down low. Positive were movements that were up high. And we literally had the students come up with a series of graphed coordinate dances. And then when they went back to take the test or to apply their knowledge, it was actually easy because they had a physical kinesthetic understanding of the concept. So I told the kids, obviously you can't dance in the middle of a test. And you can't in the middle of the grocery store when you're trying to do your math. You can't be like, hold on, the percentage. I'm going to dance the fraction dance that, you know, I was taught by Kelly King or Ariana Ross. I can't. I said, but you can close your eyes and you can visualize it. Your body will remember and you'll be able to do the math. That's with older kids. Now, with younger kids, there's a wonderful, amazing teacher. Again, I always say these teachers are gifts. Her name is Janet LaMotta. She's based out of Anne Arundel County school system. And she and I have worked together for a couple of years to the point that this year she said, I can't be selfish anymore. I need to let you work with other teachers at my school. But last year we took a book. If you don't know it, it's a great book. Listeners, this is one of the best books to teach the scientific process to your young friends. It's called Those Darn Squirrels. I apologize, I can't remember the author, but it's Those Darn Squirrels. So we took that book, which is a really funny book about an old man who wants the squirrels to go away because they keep eating his bird food, and he likes the birds. So he goes through this scientific process of trying to get the squirrels to go away. In the process of this, you literally see the different pictures. So what we had the kids do is we had the kids act it out. We had the kids dance the scientific process. We had the kids do experiments. And then we brought in all these found objects and found supplies because I tell people our work is incorporating storytelling, dance, theater, music, and visual arts. So we had the kids actually create squirrel traps like the old man had created it. And they created it out of, you know, cardboard and paper, and they did all this. And then the kids had to explain it. Well, what I left out, and this is the important part, and I did it on purpose, is that these particular children were 3, 4, and 5-year-olds.
Wow.
They could tell you at the end. They could tell you at the end the entire scientific process. They could explain to you how things were engineered. They watched online videos about squirrels and they mimicked it in their things. But then the best part is what I love about science and STEAM, that I, even though it's not technically in the definition because it's science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, but I always say if you do E squared, it's engineering and emotional learning. Because in the process of all of this collaborative work and in this story, learning this story, they really discovered how to work together, how to be kind to each other, because that's what the old man discovers at the end. So even though
wow.
he wants to get rid of the squirrels, in the end, he actually realizes the squirrel, the birds fly south, but squirrels don't. And so the squirrels, they engineered wings out of paper and feathers and balloons to fly like the birds for the old man.
What a beautiful story, and it's so great how you integrate all those elements. We need to go take our first break, so we'll be right back after this message.
There's nothing wrong with reaching out when you need. I'll be there for you, and maybe you can be for me. With a kind voice, a few kind words, an open ear for when you need to be heard, a warm heart, we can make that choice to be a kind voice, a few kind
words. Hi, I'm Kathy King, founder and executive director of Canines with a Cause. And I use my kind voice to create awareness of the importance of companion animals in our world and their ability to heal a broken soul. Canines with a Cause rescues dogs from local animal shelters. The dogs are placed with incarcerated women where they live and train as comfort companions or service animals for veterans battling PTSD. We also provide free training classes for the veterans, which enables them to develop skills to train their own dogs and become experienced handlers. The dogs provide the veterans with many benefits, simple companionship, motivation to get out of bed in the morning, and unconditional non-judgmental love. Learning to train the dog also helps the veterans out of their homes and get involved again in civilian life. It helps them develop emotional coping skills and resiliency. The dog and handler create a strong bond through working together, and the dog is trained for specific tasks to help the veteran lead a more productive, less stressful life. Canines with a Cause strives to make the world we all share a kinder, more connected place. We do this by healing through unconditional love. Separately, it's difficult for a dog in a shelter, an incarcerated woman, or a veteran suffering with post-traumatic stress disorder to share their kind voices. But by creating a channel process to bring them together, they can be a kind voice to and for each other. If you would like to know more about Canines with a Cause, visit our website, canineswithacause.org. Thank you.
A kind voice radio.
And welcome back to Kind Voice Radio. I'm David Levin.
And I'm Jessica Grinspan. Today we're talking to Ariana Ross of Story Tapestries and hearing about their arts integrated approach to learning. Ariana, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, so right before the break, you were giving us some examples of stories you use with a multi-sensory approach. And I want to talk now about your funding on Global Giving, and just listening to your stories, you're definitely a captivating storyteller, so I can definitely see why people would want to donate. So I see that as of today, October 25th, you've reached over $8,000 of your $10,000 goal. Why did you choose a goal of $10,000 for the STEM Plus Arts Initiative?
So I will tell you this, one of the things that's beautiful about Global Giving is that you can extend it so you can grow. So I will say that once we reach $10,000, may we look and see, and we know that the need continues to grow, and we may continue to step it up because the program doesn't stop. So what's amazing about Global Giving, I don't know if you all are familiar with that element, but Global Giving is that it's not like other platforms where you raise a certain amount and then that's it. You can raise a certain amount and then you can say, hey, we're going to continue to do this work in another community or in another program. We would like to raise another $5,000 or $4,000. So we look at it as an incremental that we're thinking about specific projects and specific matches. So we have matches right now that we're looking for. We have communities where we're doing Jessup Elementary School, where we're doing programming, and we're looking to see how we can match that. So
yeah,
the school itself has funding, and they, you know, the school has a little bit of funding, and they need help to get the rest of the way.
Right. Yeah, because there's such an unmet need, and as long as that need is there, then of course, then that makes sense. I love that. So I read that you and Story Tapestries have achieved superstar status on Global Giving. What does that mean?
It means that we really, I mean, for us, Global Giving was, we started doing Global Giving at the very beginning. So meaning the very beginning, when we first became a not-for-profit, we saw it as a platform and we were like, this fits us and it fits our style. So with Global Giving, they actually are more than just like a Kickstarter for not-for-profits. They offer classes you can take so you can improve yourself as a fundraiser. They offer competitions and things you can participate in. They teach you how to write project reports and thank you notes. Because since then, like, I don't know if you all are familiar, Story Tapestries is actually selected by the Catalog for Philanthropy in the D.C. area as one of the top small not-for-profits to give to.
Wow.
So I really feel like Global Giving gave us that initial training on how to be a good fundraiser, on how to communicate with your donors. So that means that we submit a certain number of project reports, and we really have taken the time to learn how to do that side correctly, because as an executive director, I tell people my favorite part of the day is when I get to work with children and artists. The part that I have to do, that is not, it's not an option, is the fundraising. I mean, we got to fundraise in order to survive, because the truth of the matter is when I started off, you know, 21 years ago, schools would hire me to come in and do this work. And what I noticed was a pattern. The schools that had the money could hire me. But then there were schools who didn't have any money or weren't able to hire me. And to me, that broke my heart. I don't want anyone to ever be prevented from receiving programming. And that's why we became a not-for-profit. We realized that we were doing the same work. We were helping people find grants. We were writing grants. We were doing all of that. But as me, myself, and I, Ariana Ross, and I go to my friends, hey, so-and-so, you want to help me write this grant? Let's make this happen. So our initial board said to me, you know, you should really become a not-for-profit. And I said, but I don't know anything about fundraising. I know how to teach. I know how to tell stories. And then we joined Global Giving. And they really trained me on how to do that. And now with the Catalog for Philanthropy, besides being in their catalog, they actually just like Global Giving, except theirs is more of a DC-based and more in-person, whereas Global Giving is more online. Catalog for Philanthropy selected us as one of the, you know, the community's voices that's doing it right. But they, too, have training that they offer us, which is great.
Business model and that aspect of it, you could kind of see that as a story in itself. I mean, do you view it that way? Sort of like they're giving you this training and it's your personal story of becoming more business savvy and trying to get funding for this wonderful initiative?
Absolutely. And I find it funny, recently a training that I attended at the Catalog for Philanthropy, And Global Giving has said the same thing over and over again. They said, look, if you want people to donate, if you want people to give to the cause, you need to make sure that you are demonstrating your story. One of the things I've learned is that you not only have to demonstrate how you're reaching people, like, you know, we can say out loud, we've partnered with 1,100 organizations in our lifetime. We've reached almost 1 million young people and adults in our lifetime as an organization. But those numbers mean very little if you don't have the faces of those individuals and those communities behind it. We can tell people, oh, we've increased test scores by 25%. And for some people, that's what they want to know. Some donors, they just want to know. But to me, that misses the whole point. That misses the heart of it, which is that twinkling smile.
Yeah, so it's like you're reaching out to different learners as well. So some of them want to hear the statistics, and then some of them want something more visual. So it's kind of you can use your storytelling skills in the same way. I'm sure that comes in handy. And I also like on Global Giving how you tell the story of what different donations can do. So, for example, you say that for only $15, you can fund a 30-minute training with one educator. That makes it really tangible. Could you speak more about that?
Well, one of the things that we realize is that sometimes people have a hard time seeing where their money is going. For us, a very small percentage of that goes back to our administrative costs. We view it as, your dollars need to go back into the community and the work. So, for $15, this happens. I tell people a prime example of how your money is used is a performance. So we do a performance at a school, and in your average audience, there's 250 to 300 kids. And the average cost is $400 for a show. And the artist receives $350 of that $400 at the minimum. So that means pretty much it's like for a little over a dollar, a child is getting to see a professional artist perform.
Yes.
For a residency and a workshop, right? A residency is often 5 days. Usually sometimes it's three, and you have 25 students, so let's say 5 days. Okay, 5 days at $500 a day and a minimum, sometimes it's 600 depending on where and what. So you're working with 100 kids a day, teaching them in-depth, detailed work over that week. That's not a whole lot of cost. And what kids walk away with is invaluable, and what teachers walk away with is invaluable. And we like that to be really, really clear. We talk about the financial story as much as the personal story. Like the kid today, this boy, Kyrie, oh my gosh, he cracked me up. But yesterday, misbehaved left and right. I was watching him going, what are we going to do tomorrow? And today we figured out what clicked him in, and he was our visual artist during the drama. And he drew the whole drama while the kids were exploring. Actually, it was Alexander, not. Anyways, but he drew the whole drama. And he was, if you walked up to ask him questions, and yesterday the teacher said, I just don't know what to do. He rolls on the floor. He doesn't listen. I said, I think he needs something else, asking him to sit. It's not going to work. And, that's what I like people to understand, is that it's just a very small amount of money can go a long way. I always tell people there's the big donors. We received a check this week for $5,000. That's wonderful and amazing, and I'm not going to lie, I was thoroughly grateful. But then I have a donor that I feel like at this point it's a year on Global Giving. I know her. She has donated every month for $13. Every month,
that's
$13. Deep. I think at this point it's 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself adds up, and it's able to support so many things. She went to him and asked me, would you prefer to get the money all at once, or would you prefer to have it spread out? I said, honestly, I like that Global Giving has what's called a reoccurring donation competition.
Yes.
And if you donate, a donor donates for 3 months, then they will match the fourth month. And that's just a wonderful gift that they give, that they're able to do. And by spreading it out, it consistently helps more children, more adults, more people.
Yeah, absolutely. We really love how you're creating such a domino effect that trickles from the, you know, the educators to the students, and then it just continues this collaborative circle in that atmosphere. Do you know much about your, for example, your monthly donors? Where do you get most of the, or what characteristics do your donors typically have, from the small donors to the larger donors?
So I would say it's interesting. We have such a wide range. It fascinates me. We recently were working with a fundraising trainer, and she asked that question, and I was like, huh. So we have anywhere from elder community members who maybe saw us at a library, or maybe their grandchild was a part of the program. And sometimes those are the people that donate $5 a month. And sometimes they'll donate once a year $100 or $25. And they are connected to the program through a grandchild or a relative. It's interesting, recently we've had a number of scientists and government officials who are, you know, connected. They're scientists at NOVA or NIH, and they've heard about the program, or they're connected through Discovery Science, and they've chosen to donate through Global Giving. What I've also noticed is that some of our larger donors are what I call true heart philanthropists, meaning that they hear about our work, they see a video, we have coffee with them, we have a conversation with them, they check it out, and they really see the heart value of us, like how we are adding to the community by raising more thoughtful, compassionate, innovative young people. And so they give because they really care about the heart. But then I've seen recently this group of donors who are more economic-based, that are really like, so tell me what you do. Tell me what I'm investing in. Like, I'm investing in you and monetarily, and what problem are you solving in the world? And so I explained to some of these donors, and one man in particular was talking to me just about that idea that if you invest in a community, right, so you're investing in human capital, human stock, human capital. And when you invest in human capital, then human beings live their lives at a richer level. And those human beings buy more things, get better jobs, purchase real estate. So he was saying that if you look at that human capital and actually reach out to, so recently we reached out to some business leaders, some business owners, some real estate agents and developers, looking at that if you give back to the school in your neighborhood, it will transform your community.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you so much, Arietta. We have to take our second break. We will be right back.
This is NASCAR driver Kurt Busch, and I am proud to support our nation's veterans. Do you know you can get a faster decision on your disability compensation claims by filing an electronic fully developed claim, or e-claim, on eBenefits? Take it from a guy who lives his life in the fast lane. Faster is better. Visit eBenefits.va.gov today to learn more.
A lot has changed from when Nola Osh started school until the time she finished.
When I received my diploma, it was a big to-do.
At 95 years young, Nola became the world's oldest college graduate.
If we don't concentrate on our ages, we go ahead and do things as if we were younger.
So no matter how old you are, live life and pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
A Kind Voice Radio.
And welcome back to Kind Voice Radio. I'm David Levins.
And I'm Jessica Grinspan. And tonight we're talking to Arietta Ross of Story Tapestries.
Earlier we were talking about the classroom stories you do. And when you're formulating a story you want to present to the classroom, I would guess you have like a whole inventory of stories you go through that you could pull elements from to pick the right story for that classroom. Can you talk a little bit about how you organize all the stories you utilize in the schools?
Absolutely. And because Story Tapestries is a collaborative network of more than just me, which is really nice, I would say that everybody approaches it slightly differently. I know as a storyteller, when I moved into my home, my husband teased me that I had more books than I had clothes. And my library has only grown in the past, I think we've lived here now for 11 years. So, yes, I have a lot of books that I cull through, that I go through, and I love the library. So as a storyteller, I will, you know, go to the library and explore and learn and grow and grab and hear and read. But I'm also very careful. I will not, when I'm performing, I'm careful to only tell stories from cultures that I have a deep connection to or an understanding of. If someone is looking for a storyteller or a performer and I'm not familiar with that culture, I would rather go and find the right artist to make the right match. And we're very careful about that at Story Tapestries, to be culturally responsible about how we do this. Now, when I'm in the classroom and we're teaching in partnership, sometimes we will, you know, utilize a story, and I might not have as deep of a familiarity with that country or that culture. But again, I always try to be culturally responsible, because it is a way to model for the children, especially in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area. Every room we go into, there's always an immigrant population there. We have a lot of Syrian refugees. We have El Salvadorians, Hondurans. So I want to be careful that I honor their culture while selecting the story that fits right. At the same time, something I discovered early in my career, I was performing for a group of kids. I had lived in Indonesia, and I was performing for a group of kids, and I said something about taking a taxi. And when I finished, adult in the room said to me, I just want you to be aware, this is probably at this point, I would say 17 years ago, I want you to be aware that our children will never see taxis, because in our community is so small, if they need to get somewhere, they'll call a neighbor or a grandpa. So be aware that they don't know what that is. So that's the other thing that we are consciously aware of, our artists, is selecting something that not only expands a child's or an adult's understanding of the world around them, but it doesn't expand it so fast that they're confused and they don't understand. So if someone has never been to the beach before, you know, how can you use your words to describe the beach so that they can see it, visualize it, and experience it, even though maybe they've never left their community and they don't really know what a beach is?
Well, that's great how it's so well thought out, and you try so hard to keep things authentic, because I guess you could have a scripted presentation, but there's so many things that go beyond the script that you're very conscientious about getting right. And one of them seems to be getting the right voice for the culture. And I know you have a Facebook initiative where you are doing something with voice. Can you talk a little bit about how voice is important?
Absolutely. I mean, voices, as I mentioned at the very beginning, voice is the heart of what we do. So for our Facebook initiative that we are hoping to continue to expand, and our new website actually has a platform where we can host webinars. But on Tuesday nights, we have Tuesdays with Story Tapestries, 7 minutes at the most. Sometimes it's 10. Sometimes we just stretch it, where we get different storytellers, different artists, different educators to come on and share their voice, to share their story. And you said something that about it being scripted, and I will be honest with you. Some of our shows are, but a lot of them are not. Because as a storyteller, you get that frame So it's a frame more than a, you say the sentence, then the sentence, then the sentence. And then based on your audience, you adjust it. Last night, a young man, Anthony Truitt, who's a media literacy artist we work with, he came to my home because we are crafting a short 1 minute, 1.5 minute at the most, video to share the story of our organization as a part of our development focus coming up. And he was laughing because we did write a script for that. And I don't normally write my scripts. I pick the story and then I craft it orally and then I change it. I'm very much in the tradition of traditional storytellers, unlike some of the theater artists we have who do write it all out. But this we wrote out because it was being filmed. And even when I did it, we did it 3 times. He was like, every time you changed it. I was like, I'm sorry, I can't help myself. Because I was like, oh, I can add a line here. And he was like, all right, are you comfortable with me listening to the different versions? And then I'll edit the right pieces, you know, for this audio part in, you know, to overlay over the photos. And I said, of course, I totally trust you to tell the right story. Because each time I did it, I added a new sentence. I adjusted it here, and I was like, this sounds better. I'm not very good at sticking to a script.
When a doctor wants to heal a patient, bedside manner is important. The doctor having some empathy for the patient and connecting it with the patient. Can you talk about how you make it safe for children to participate?
That is critical. I mean, really critical. Becky Bailey has this method called responsive classroom, and Becky Bailey's brilliant. And I studied and I learned, and I really paid attention to that, as well as I learned a process called the dialogue circle process. I did several trainings with the Conflict Resolution Center of Montgomery County, and I found that I incorporated that into my work. So with the dialogue circle process, there's a talking piece. So whoever has the talking piece talks. And then I usually, for me, I was making the talking piece a soft stuffed animal. So for example, there was a young boy today who just struggled. He was just having a bad day. So I said, here's the deal, class. I know right now Ms. Ross needs to talk. Can I hand my talking piece to Lucas? He just needs to squeeze the stuffed animal while we're working. But you'll know that even when Lucas is holding it, unless Lucas is talking, that it's Ms. Ross's turn. Can we agree to that? And they all were like, of course. And so Lucas, you know, held the stuffed animal, squeezed the stuffed animal, tossed the stuffed animal. He needed that stuffed animal to ground him. So each child may need something different to ground them. So I, for example, have watched Jamal and Diane Macklin, and I've watched Reggie. Reggie calls it the tether effect. For him, he's this big ball of like energy and smiles and laughter. So he gets the kids laughing so that when he asks them to stand up and do something dramatic, they see that he is silly and the teacher in the room is being silly, and they've already embarrassed themselves, so therefore the kids don't feel embarrassed. But then in addition...
Wow.
Some kids are not physical. So today, for example, I set up in the room, I explained to the teachers, and a number of our artists do this, that the concept of a safe place to some students feels like time out. It feels like you're sending them to time out. And that's not going to help them. So what we did is we created the Banco Público, an audience bank. And the teachers, you know, explain to them that in the audience bank, there's drawing paper, there's colored pencils, there's markers, there's crayons. So if a kid is out of control, they're really struggling to focus and participate effectively, they can go take a seat in the audience bank. And there they can draw, they can write, and then they can rejoin. And we talked about when you're in the audience bank, it's not your job to just sit there and pout and get mad and frustrated. It's really your job to pay attention, to document. So with middle schoolers, sometimes giving them I sometimes will give them my phone to take pictures. If they're a kid who's like, I don't want to get up. I don't want to be dramatic. I don't want to do that. So I'll tell an artist, I'll tell one of my younger artists, so give them the iPad to document, to take photos. They're still listening. They're still participating. They're just choosing a different voice. And in addition, we work with an organization called Open Circle Theater. Open Circle Theater has trained us on how to be inclusive. They're a professional theater company that works with artists with disabilities. So with Suzanne Richard, the artistic director, we designed a strategy called Voice Partner, Gesture Partner. So sometimes one child will be the voice and another child will be the mover. We also designed a vocabulary building strategy called puppets. Some children want to be touched, other children do not. So some children, you'll sculpt them like a piece of clay and they'll become ecstatic or they'll become chlorophyll. And some children, they don't want you to touch them. So you can say, all right, I want you to pretend that your arm has strings attached to it. And Susie and I talked to teachers about how you can literally pretend to lift their arm and they'll do it. And the idea being that you want to include every, you want to work with a child's ability. So focus on what they can do versus what they can't do. So in our classroom, we have children who have disabilities, who are autistic, who feel like their voice has been suppressed because they're not comfortable. Wow. They don't feel safe. And so it's a matter of looking at, well, what can you do? Okay, you don't like to write. Okay, so what can you do? Well, I like to draw. Okay, how about you draw, and then afterwards, can you tell me, and I'll write it down.
Yeah, yes, so like a whole science on how to connect with your audience. We need to go to our final break, and we're going to make it a quick one so we can get right back. There's so much we'd like to discuss in so little time.
We loved him in Family Ties. We cheered him in Teen Wolf, and we revered him in Back to the Future. Now, Michael J. Fox is back, encouraging fellow fighters of Parkinson's disease to take the future into their own hands. In his most spirited and courageous role ever, this inspirational screen icon vows never to give up until a cure is found. Optimism. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
A Kind Voice Radio.
And welcome back to Kind Voice Radio. I'm David Levins.
And I'm Jessica Greenspan. And tonight we're talking to Ariana Ross of Story Tapestries and learning how her organization transcends barriers to reach learners of all kinds. Ariana, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. This has been wonderful,
Ariana,
talking to both of you.
Oh, yeah. Yes, fascinating. And we're really enjoying hearing your stories and the stories of Story Tapestries. Now I'd like to come full circle, speaking of circles, and get to your personal story. So what kind of learner would you say you are?
Ooh, so I am a kinesthetic visual learner. If you tell it to me, I forget it. If you show me, if you have me do it, I'll remember.
Okay. And what inspired you to start performing?
Ooh, so long story short, my mother said that when I was born, she knew I was going to be a talker because I never stopped making noise. And my grandmother, my two grandmothers, and my grandfather they told stories. My grandmother, everything. She washed my hair. We were in a beauty parlor. You know, we were brushing my teeth. I was, you know, cleaning my trees. I mean, everything had a story attached to it. My mom is a pianist. So growing up, I always played the piano. So the arts was just a part of who I was. When I went to college, I had a professor, Reeves Collins, and he sat me down and he said, what about, you know, creative drama, education, being a storyteller? And my response was, no, I want to be a director on Broadway. And he went, okay. And then he just kind of waited because he was a smart man, Reeves Collins, incredibly smart. And he waited until I figured out I loved directing. I still direct. But I didn't really enjoy as much the environment. I loved telling stories. I loved going out in the community and sharing stories, hearing stories, experiencing stories. And then my senior year, I had a professor, and she was from India. And that is what sent me on my journey. She said to me, you know, India, when they tell stories, when someone says they're an artist, they also could be a baker and a butcher, that the arts are not separate from real life, from everyday life. So I after I graduated from college, I actually spent a year working in a school that I think was a charter school in D.C., Children's Studio School, Arts Integrated. And then I went and I lived in India for 3 years. And I danced and I performed and I learned and I absorbed. And it changed my world. I worked with a man called Bansi Kaul, Rang Vidushak. And I had an opportunity to work with him to learn. And he really believed that every person, every child, every adult had it within them to be an artist. And he used the arts as a tool to teach the community lessons. He used the arts as a tool to help people laugh. And then while I was down in India, I worked with a man named Anmol Valani, and another man, another mentor of mine, in an organization called Kutupatrai. Mutuswami was his name. He, unfortunately, I wanted to say his name because he actually passed away just a few days ago. And he really showed me how in his culture, in Kutupatrai, Terukutu was the art form. And there, they tell the story of the Mahabharata for 7 days, all night long. And the whole community is there. And if you fall asleep in the audience, they'll wake you up. And they'll, like, pour water over you. And they'll say, it's time to wake up. You're missing an important part. But they used story to really teach the lessons of life. And I watched how he in particular would work with young village men and women. He would bring them to the city of Chennai and he would train them. And he would give them a vocation and he would give them a job. And they would go back into their community and they would use their skills as a storyteller, as a musician, to really change their community. And that is what I really gleaned from that experience, is that the arts has this ability to change community, and that I can perform and I can direct a show and I can do all of that. But for me, I don't want to do it just to entertain. I know that I'm going to entertain people, but I want to do it in such a way that when people leave the performance, I am honoring my teachers and my ancestors in this work by really making an impact, doing something that changes.
Yeah.
And so that's really where my sort of journey into story tapestries and to realizing that, okay, I can be more than a performer if I become a not-for-profit. Okay, I can be more than a not-for-profit if my vision is about building a network of people who believe in this. And now we're in that place where we have this network, and now we want to do more than that. We really want to honor the voices in our community who are using story to deal with inequities in education, to inspire people to find their own voice. You asked me in the beginning about November the 13th. I don't know if you want me to mention it or not.
Yeah, please go ahead. And yeah, you can talk more about that. We love the theme.
So that's really, for me, that's really where that full circle, because on November the 13th at the Ratner Museum is a tiny museum in Bethesda. You can go there only by appointment only. However, it is free to go to. A beautiful museum. Paul, who his organization, House, is launching in a few months, and he connected us with Phil Ratner. And we are having this event, Threads of Change, Connecting Our Stories. And if you're interested in coming, if any of the listeners are interested in coming, if anyone wants to come, to just reach out to Story Tapestry. Send us an email and we will send you an invitation. There is an RSVP process because we are honoring community leaders and young people and artists who really have demonstrated how their voice and how can really impact community. So Carol Trawick, we are honoring her. Reggie Kabiko, excellent. We are honoring him as an artist. But I think my most exciting piece is that we are also honoring young people.
Ariane, it's been great talking to you. So you said listeners could reach out to Story Tapestries. Could you give the listeners your email address at Story Tapestries so they know how to get in touch and attend this event?
Absolutely. And just be a part of our community. We're always looking for new friends. So our email address is, the best one is administrator@storytapestries.org. So take it, make it one word, administrator@storytapestries.org. And if you forget that, just go to our website, www.storytapestries.org, and you can reach out to us that way. And I apologize if I talked a little too much.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Ariane. It's been great talking to you. Unfortunately, we do have to wrap up. But thank you all for listening. And we really hope that Ariane's inspiring stories have helped you find and tell your story. Thanks, everyone, and good night.
Fellow soldier, how's your day? Come take my arm, let's walk and sing away.
Oh.
I want
Hello?
To know your thoughts now, yes it's true.
Uh-oh.
And that blue
Hello?
Bird, he flew by now just for you. Step outside, you don't know who you're meeting. With me, just know that I am there for you, to hear your voice, care to lend a hand. In this moment, we will work together and turn a new kind stranger to a friend. Walk down that lonely road alone, searching for a place to call home. The path is long, we cannot see the end, but the journey's so much better with a friend. Soul. That cup of cheer you're drinking sure tastes sweet. I'm glad that your acquaintance I did make. Ooh, and you know that I am there for you, to hear your voice, care to lend a hand. In this moment, we'll work together.
Voice Radio.